They have been making history at the tennis tournament at Wimbledon. The first four seeds on the women's side of the draw, they're all gone. But the Williams sisters, you know them, they're both there. And their opponents, kind of weak. They could meet in the finals. Over on the men's side, things have gone more according to Hoyle. Roger Federer is alive. Rafael Nadal is alive. I mean, everyone's alive, but they're still playing. And as is this Scotsman named Andy Murray, who has all the Brits in a tizzy. Tom Parada is a senior editor at Tennis Magazine. He is in London covering Wimbledon, where it looks like rain. Is that right, Tom?
That's what it looks like, and thanks for having me on.
Oh, sure. Thank you for coming on. So what does this mean? What the gentlemen, as they say, are to play today? Might those matches be postponed?
It looks like we're going to get some tennis in, but I don't know that we're going to get all of it in. The matches start in another – they start, you know, at the top of the hour, and it looks like the later afternoon is going to be better than the early afternoon, but they can play until about 9:15 at night, so there's a chance we'll get it all in, but I wouldn't be surprised if the second matches are – delayed or carried into tomorrow.
So who's first up to play? Who might be able to play today?
Roger Federer is up first on center court, followed by the big match of the day, Nadal and Andy Murray, who had a great comeback the other night, and has got the British people very excited here. That's going to be the big match of the day.
Now, is he British? He quasi-claims to be British, but there was some controversy when he went online and said, I want Scotland, the soccer team, to beat anyone, especially Britain.
He's made a few comments like that in the past, and people here haven't taken well to it. But, I mean, I think it seems to be more of a he's more rejected the English side, but they've accepted him a bit more. But the relationship's a little bit rocky. But I think the other day's comeback did a lot to mend that, because the crowd was amazing in there, and it was a comeback from two sets down. He was all over the papers. He's being, you know, described as a hero sort of everywhere.
And, right. And if the French can claim Mary Pierce with very few links to actual French heritage.
Yeah, then this
certainly
is a little easier to do than that. I agree.
Now, the last two championships have been Federer versus Nadal, right?
That's right.
Okay. So why do you think, or don't you think, that this is what we'll see on the men's side in this?
I think
year?
It's what we'll see again. Definitely. They're the two best players on this surface. They're the two most consistent players for the last 3 or 4 years, especially Federer, even longer than that. And just, you know, on grass, I mean, I think they have a lot of Federer has a lot more shots than everyone else in the game. Everyone's known that. But I think Nadal on grass is much better than people have given him credit for in terms of tactics, in terms of his ability to volley a bit. He's improved his game a lot in the last few years, and determination is a big thing with him. There's no one on the tour like him. He's more determined than anyone out there.
And he's battling through injuries, and he's doing well. But I want to ask you about tactics, because from a casual observer, it doesn't seem that the game of tennis has very many tactics. It seems like 20 years ago there were a lot of tactics, but now it seems like they just bomb away from the baseline. And if you look at the court, the baseline is worn out, because that's where, you know, it's grass, and so all the grass dies where the players are. And up near the nets, it's lush green. So tell me about what kind of tactics I'm not seeing as a casual observer.
Yeah, no question. It's more subtle than it was, and I think that's a problem. It was easier to notice years ago, but there are things in terms of taking pace off the ball, in terms of hitting different angles, coming in at a more opportune time rather than serving volleying right away.
Mm-hmm.
Drop shots, something Nadal does really well. You know, taking something off the serve, different placements. But again, that's harder for the general viewer to see, and I think it does, you know, it does make the game maybe a little bit more boring to the general viewer, which is why Federer has been, you know, I think a revelation for a lot of people, because his tactics are a lot easier to see, because he does a lot of old style things.
The man comes to the net every once in a while. We like
exactly.
That. Yeah. Now, how
does one-handed backhand and so forth? Yeah.
Put Roger Federer in historical context. Is he of Sampraesian proportions, Laverian proportions? How great is Federer? How will the game remember him?
He's going to be remembered as one of the best the game's had, even if he doesn't win another tournament. He's already won 12 majors. Sampras has a record at 14. If he wins another two or three and ties him, it's pretty fair to remember him as the best ever. A lot of people think he has to win the French Open, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard for him to do if Nadal is healthy. But I think no matter what happens, he's going to be remembered as one of the best ever. But the next couple of years, he could make himself clearly the best ever. And it's going to be a hard road, but it's certainly possible. He's only 26.
And Nadal is the master of clay. I know that, you know, the surfaces play differently, and people who like tennis like the fact that all the different tournaments, well, two are on the hard court, and then there's grass in Wimbledon, and then there's clay at the French Open, Roland Garros. Is there, among the cognoscenti, a agreed-upon surface which is the best reflection of pure tennis?
Well, I mean, I think like it or not, the best reflection right now is probably the hard courts because that's what people play on the most. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, they get the most practice in on it, and it's the most sort of, I guess, neutral surface. But the funny thing about the surfaces is that they've all come together a bit in the last few years. I mean, players say that clay is playing a little faster and a little harder than it was, and that the grass, you're getting a lot better bounces than you used to. So it's sort of becoming not quite uniform, but moving a little closer together. But I think that, you know, the hard court's probably the best reflection there is. But, I like the grass and clay season best of all. It's a nice switch, and I think, you know, a bit more colorful too.
Let's analyze the women's brackets. What went wrong for the top seeds?
Everything went wrong. To put it simply, the top four players are out immediately. A big disappointment to Anna Ivanovic, who just won the French Open and lost very early. Maria Sharapova, too. Three out of the four lost to unseeded players, which in the women's game is very uncommon. And even more uncommon at Wimbledon, which is not really prone to upsets. Wimbledon's where usually the best players sort of dominate their way through. There's a lot of theories. Players came in a little flat. They didn't play some grass court warm-up tournaments. There's always questions on the tour whether Wimbledon and the French Open are too close to each other. They're only 2 weeks apart. It's been that way forever, but
yeah.
Players are getting a little bit more injured and a little more tired and complaining about it more now. So there's, you know, a lot of talk about doing something about that, but very hard to do.
And how's this,
to get events to move their time.
And how's this technology called the Hawkeye, where it's supposed to assist the umpires in calling balls in and out? How is that working?
I'm a fan of Hawkeye, and there's been a lot of controversy about it. There's a research report that's coming out soon saying that, it's less accurate than you think. They claim that they're accurate within 4 millimeters, which obviously is very small. My essential thing is that it's more accurate than people.
Yeah, that's it, as long as it's significantly more accurate than human eye, you gotta
embrace
it.
And it would make sense to replace the human eye. It's good that they're still making the general calls, but you're going to miss calls sometimes. Players are hitting the ball 100 miles an hour on every shot. It's very hard to see.
How sad would that have been just to see John McEnroe screaming at a machine, though? It does take some of the human element.
That's the funny thing is I think when Hawkeye came in, a lot of people thought, this is going to make tennis more boring because there's going to be nothing to argue about. But people are still arguing. So you get the drama, and I think you get better calls, too.
And finally, quick question. How much is a bottle of water there?
A bottle of water here is twice as much as it is in New York. That's generally how I look at everything. Same number, and then with the exchange rate, just multiply it by two.
Okay. 20 euros? Because they do get you for the...
Yeah, about... Well, for a portable, like a single-person bottle, yeah, say like 2.5 pounds.
Oh, my Lord. Tom Parada, senior editor at Tennis Magazine, friend of the BPP. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks a lot for having me. Take care.
And coming up, we will discuss Stephen Hatfill and the money he got from the government, meaning you and me. This is the Brian Park Project from NPR News.